Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
Now I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Well, David, I haven't had much cricket going on recently. I don't play any games in the off-season or anything. I've been playing in the nets a few times, but you've been playing in your season. You've started it. You're underway. How have you been going?
Yeah, not too bad at all. We won again this week, so good news for us. We're on a winning streak at the moment for some reason. I don't know why. Must be doing something right. We were in a bit of trouble though this week because we won the toss and decided to bat first, because in our games, in our league, you get extra points if you bat first and win, because it's a bit more positive than chasing. So we decided to bat first. We put our faith in the batsman to put the runs on the board, and then the faith in the bowlers to bowl the opposition out. We lost quite a few wickets early on. We were five down fairly quickly, for about 70. So we were in quite a lot of trouble, and I was out third ball for naught, so that didn't do very well for me. And luckily our tail had a bit of a wag, and we managed to get 118 on the board, all out.
Yep.
In about 43 overs, and in our league it's 100 over split. So if you are bowled out in 43 overs, then the opposition get their 50 overs plus however many overs you didn't bat. So they got an extra 7 overs. So they got 57 overs to score the runs.
Yep.
So we decided to steel ourselves and bowl extremely well. It was a typical early season wicket, slow, not doing particularly a lot off the pitch or in the air, but there was a little bit of swing around.
Yeah.
And we just kept taking wickets, which was brilliant. So we bowled them out for about 80 something, and the match was won. So, you know, on little things that these games turn, you know, because when our number 8 walked in, you know, we looked like we weren't even going to get 100, and and when they started all right, although they lost a couple of wickets, you know, they were easily keeping up with the rate because they had the extra time, but a couple more wickets fell, and another victory for us. So we're doing well.
Yeah, you never know when tail-ender batsmen can surprise you. They do the most awkward things sometimes, and it's especially frustrating for the other side, I guess. If when they were bowling, they think they were on top, and all of a sudden, tail-ender or lower-order batsman comes in and takes the game away from them.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and it was very good because luckily we bat quite a long way down, and one of the tail-enders is just a slogger, basically. He always plays in exactly the same way. He's only got one style, and that is, if it's straight, block it. If it's not straight, have a massive swing at it. Yeah. And he did that, and he got 27 in hardly any time at all. Meanwhile, the chap at the other end, who is technically, you know, a lot better batsman, he just basically held up an end, you know, hit the bad ball for a boundary every now and again, and sort of worked the strike around, and he got 15 or 16. And so they put on a stand of, I don't know what it was, 30 or something like that, 30 or 40, something like that. And it was you know, it was enough to give us those extra runs that we needed to win the match.
I've always seen in certain situations, aggression is the best form of defence. Yeah, well, the first time we played the top team, we got bowled out for 50. But the second time we played them, we were out of the semis anyway. So we thought we might as well, all of us, have a go. And we tried to go aggressive from the start, and we got about 150 doing that. So I guess sometimes, depends on the situation, but aggression might be the best form of defense sometimes.
It definitely can, especially if it's your natural game. Yeah. You know, the worst thing you can do, I think, is if you're naturally inclined to play aggressively, is to try and rein yourself in too much. So, you know, you don't want to take unnecessary risks. But, I mean, like the chap who got all those runs yesterday, he only plays one way. Everyone knows that's the way he plays. And he either comes off and he gets, you know, he'll get 30 runs or 25 runs or, you know, however many runs he'll get, you know, he'll come off. Or he'll be out first ball trying to smash it over extra cover for 6. That's just the way he plays. But it's good to have a balance as well, I think, because I don't think it would have worked if the chap at the other end had decided to try and smash it as well. he decided to play the sort of anchor role and just stay there, what to give the other guy enough time to smash it around. So it's good to have a balance. You don't want, but that's the same, I think, all the way through the innings. You know, it's like when you have two openers. It's good to have one opener who just stays there for a while and knocks it around, that doesn't take any unnecessary risks, and another opener who's prepared to go for the wide balls. So yeah, it can work. It can work at any time. It's good. And we attacking cricket is a lot more enjoyable anyway, isn't it? Attacking bowling, attacking batting. It's a lot more fun to play, a lot more fun to watch. So more power to it.
Personally, how do you think your keeping went, David? Have you been seeing any signs of improvement or anything you need to work on?
I couldn't fault my keeping performance. I didn't let any byes past. No catches or stumpings came my way.
Yeah.
Although one chap did edge the ball to me and didn't walk in. He was given not out. But you know that happens.
Yeah.
Especially at our level, when you don't get appointed umpires. I was playing second 11 cricket, and you don't have appointed umpires at that level. Yeah. So you get player umpires, and they're less inclined to give it out.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they cheat, but you know they're less inclined. They give much more of the benefit of the doubt to the batsman.
Yeah.
So you know that was a bit of a shame, but zero byes and a couple of good leg side takes. So you know I was pretty happy with how it went.
Are you much of a walker yourself, David?
It depends what level I'm playing. If I play in first team cricket when there's appointed umpires, I wouldn't walk, because it's up to the umpire to decide, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That's what they're there for.
Yeah.
But when you're playing second 11 cricket and you've got an umpire who is perhaps your teammate, which is often the case, your teammate, you know, most of the time you know whether you've nicked it or not.
Mm.
So, you know, if you nick it and the keeper catches it, just walk off. Don't, because if you leave it up to the player's likely to say not out, unless it's a really blatant edge.
Player's
likely to say not out. I think that's probably over the line. I think that's probably too far over the line. So it depends on the situation. But my dad's a Yorkshireman, and he always brought me up never to walk.
Yeah.
So I have compromised on that a bit, because you know it's not fair to your teammates to make them decide if you know you're out.
Yeah, that's right.
So how's your nets been going?
It's been going so all right so far, but I went for a session today and I was pretty disappointed, actually. I found out that my bowling was a lot slower, and guys I'd usually have a bit of trouble in, they were easily picking me off, driving me with ease, cutting me, pulling me. It was frustrating at times, but sometimes it was just funny to watch, because I just couldn't believe the way the ball was coming out of my hand. It was like it'd be a 2020 batsman's dream. But yeah, I would have loved to be facing myself.
What do you think that was? Have you been you've been stressed out or anything?
Maybe it might be due to the lack of sleep, because I haven't been sleeping well the past few days watching the cricket late at night.
Oh, really?
And throughout
the IPL,
the past few weeks. Yeah, throughout the past few weeks, I've also had lots of university commitments, so study assignments, etc. So maybe that might be a cause, but it could also be sort of training issue, because I haven't been doing any sort of explosive power gym training movements. I've just been doing a lot of weight training, sort of trying to get my strength up. So yeah, a couple of factors there.
I mean it's difficult for a big change to occur over a few weeks in terms of, like, you know, in the gym, that kind of thing. But I suspect it's down to, you know, just the lifestyle that you've got on the moment, which is, you know, the focus is off cricket, which is fair enough. You know, that's can't be the centre of the universe all the time, can it?
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, you gotta look after yourself a bit, maybe. I mean, you know, if you're not getting if you're not getting enough sleep, then your body reacts in funny ways. You might feel okay, but you know, suddenly you've lost that zip with the bowling. So maybe it's down to that.
Yeah, probably. You have some exciting news, David.
Yeah, a couple of exciting things. Yeah. It's one we can't announce just yet, but it's going to be very, very exciting when we do announce it. So if you're listening to this for the first time, then this show for the first time, then make sure you subscribe. Either go over to iTunes and subscribe, or if you've got your favourite podcast catching program that you use that isn't iTunes, then subscribe to our feed, because we'll announce it on My Cricket Coach on the website and also on the My Cricket Coach show as soon as we can. So keep listening out for that. Very exciting news to do with a course that's coming up. And the other thing which we can tell you about is that Ian Pont has agreed to be our fast bowling expert.
That's great news.
That is great news, yeah. So Ian's agreed to answer a question a week regarding fast bowling from now on. So we're going to have a regular feature with Ian answering that question in his usual very engaging and very detailed style. So I'm looking forward to that a great deal.
It sounds exciting. And speaking about Ian Pont, you guys might remember that last week we were going to have our five question section, but due to technical difficulties, we couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But this week, we have it. So Ian is an ex-first-class fastballer and a baseball pitcher as well. And he authored the best book on fastballing ever written, The Fastballer's Bible. And he also coaches his ABSAT fastballing methods to professional cricketers. And he's inspiring young players and coaches alike. So let's have a listen to what Ian Pont has to say in his five question section.
You work a lot with professional cricketers. What to you makes a professional stand out from a club player?
Well, I think there are two things, David, that really differentiate a club cricketer or an amateur player from a professional. The first one for me is strength and conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, I think, is skill levels. Now, they sound quite obvious, but I just want to drill a bit deeper into both of those. Mm. From a strength and conditioning point of view, we're talking about the ability to do something on a day-to-day basis over and over and over again. And what you'll find often is that a club cricketer who plays on a Saturday will do quite well and think, yeah, I could do this at a higher level. But the reality is cricket has moved away from just being a person who's skillful into more of an athletic viewpoint. And we now see that a lot of the strength and conditioning being done at counties is being done by someone who is a strength and conditioning coach. When I started, for example, in the game, it was six laps of the pitch and a bit of a run down to the local park and back. And then in the nets, what's happening now, of course, is we've got more physical activity. We've got more SAQ drills. We've got more fast feet drills. We've got more general strength and conditioning like gym work, specific work on muscle groups, etc. And a bigger thing is the understanding of that player about how fit they need to be. On the skill side, we've obviously got people who are very, very aware of the technique. And what I would say to a lot of amateur players who do well on a Saturday and might think of themselves as having an opportunity, or a young lad coming into the game who wants a career, is that understanding of what they do technically is absolutely vital. Most of the international players that you see on a day-to-day basis totally understand what they're doing. They may make mistakes, but they're incredibly aware of what they're doing. So I think the biggest difference between amateur cricketers and professional is the fitness levels on the one side and the awareness of the skill levels on the other.
Your 100-mile-an-hour fast bowling prodigy, Atul Sharma, has created quite a stir, both online in the forums and in cricket magazines. One thing that's come out about his story is how much more athletic he is than most cricketers. How does that give him an advantage?
Well, Atul is a cricketer firstly and foremostly. He played regular organised cricket up until he was 16.
Mm.
Then he had some injuries and then had to change his action and is now back, hopefully playing again very soon. But what Atul has done in the preceding 6 or 7 years, where he's been really focused on having a career, is he's gone away and trained like an athlete.
Mm.
I mean, to the point now where he is Olympic standard in terms of a lot of the work he does from a training viewpoint. He's built like a 100-meter sprinter, for example.
Yeah.
He can run 100 meters in 10.5 seconds, which is pretty quick.
Yeah.
He can also throw a javelin, a long distance, 80 meters plus, which again is Olympic standard throwing. So he has two disciplines outside cricket which help him, strangely, for cricket. And he has trained specifically to build a strong power base through the core of his body, and also having strong legs to support his action as he bowls. So whilst he hasn't gone out to become a cricketer per se, in the sense that he's, you know, he's trained just for cricket, he's almost cross-trained to give him a good engine, strong legs, a big core, and understanding, as I said earlier in the previous answer, exactly what he does in the bowling action. And I think that by training as an athlete, he's really supported himself as a cricketer.
That brings us on nicely to the next question, which is, how difficult was it to turn the raw materials of speed and power and athleticism into a bowling action?
It's always a challenge when you meet someone like Atul Sharma, because he is so big. I mean, relative to a normal cricketer, he makes Shoaib Akhtar look skinny, in the sense that, you know, Shoaib's a big guy, spends time in the gym, but Atul just looks completely different. And when you see somebody with that kind of power and strength, that doesn't always equate into bowling fast. It isn't just build that equals speed or pace. What power equals is the ability to support what you're trying to do through a bowling action. So, for example, if you are strong, fit and healthy, in theory, if you could put everything else in place, you have a massively fast bowler. I tend to have worked with a lot of bowlers who are very slim, slender, quite flexible. And if you look around the world cricket scene at the moment, you don't see many big, fast bowlers. I mentioned Shoaib Akhtar. He's probably out on his own. Now there's Atul Sharma to go with him. I don't know whether that's the way forward for fast bowling coaching, but what I am saying is, if you have the flexibility, strength, suppleness, and the ability to get through the ball like a tall, slim bowler, if you add power to that and a strong, stable base and an understanding, you've got a seriously good fast bowler. And I think with Atul, it's been a challenge to take all of the factors and put them into fast bowling. But because he's got such a good brain and understanding what he's doing, we've made the journey relatively fast.
At My Cricket Coach, we get contacted a lot by school-age players all over the world who want to make it as a professional cricketer.
Yeah.
You've set up a partnership with Coleford School to help with that here in the UK. How does that work?
Well, MCI Coleford, as it's going to be called, is an opportunity for people to come and get a world-class cricket education and a first-class school education. That's never been done before in the UK, certainly not by an independent body coming in and setting that up. There are other schools that have cricket centres or tennis centres or golf centres or rugby scholarships, let's say, but they're run by the school. This is the first time, as far as I'm aware, that an independent outside organisation with a record of producing first-class cricketers is coming and superimposing itself onto a top-level school. So we sat down with Coleford. It's in Bury St Edmunds in Suffolk. They have 450 acres of grounds. And we said to them, is there a way we could come and deliver fantastic cricket on top of your school education? And they said, absolutely yes, because they started their own tennis centre about 2 years ago and it's been wildly successful. We wanted to follow that on. So MCI Coleford is going to be the opportunity for people to come to a school of cricket, maybe even drop a couple of subjects, focus specifically on cricket, but also get a backup in education as well.
You always seem to have some coaching innovation up your sleeve. MCI Coleford's a perfect example of that. Is there any super top secret stuff you're working on right now?
I don't think there's anything sort of super top secret. I think what we've discovered in the last 10 years of working with ABSAC coaching, which is the methodology that I use, is that there are ways of doing things slightly better. And I'll give you an exact example. What we've discovered is that the arm pull in the action, or what I call the stretch reflex, which is what's used in javelin, is really vital for increasing speed and accuracy. If you think of a javelin thrower, they let the javelin pull their arm backwards whilst driving away from it to create this huge stretch down the lats in the back of the body and their arm. And fast bowlers do the same. We see it in an extreme version with someone like Malinga of Sri Lanka, or recently Fidel Edwards. Right. Or if you go back a few years, you see someone like Jeff Thompson. They have huge stretch reflexes, and they're all fast bowlers. And I think the arm pull or the stretch reflex is something that a lot of coaches could focus on doing. We've used it with Atul Sharma. He's got that javelin style action. And I think a lot of the guys that I'm working with now, the youngsters from 11 and 12, are beginning to understand that if you delay the bowling arm and pull it through faster, you increase your bowling speed. So I would say that it's not a top secret thing, David, but it's a focus in on drilling down into the action, what actually creates the speed, drive of the hips, arm pull, stretch reflex. Those three things, for me, dictate who's going to bowl fast and who isn't.
Ian Pomp, those are your five questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ian. You can find out more about Ian Pond and his projects at maverickscricket.com and learn more about his methods by enrolling on his online fast bowling coaching course at pitchvision.com/academy. It's time for our question section, David. Are you ready?
Yep, I'm like a coiled spring.
Welcome to the question section of the My Cricket Coach Show. Our first question is from Dean, and he asks, are you allowed sometimes to eat more often than every 2 hours, especially after school? Because no matter how much I eat, I find that my weight remains stable. I'm 13 and my weight is around the 55 kilogram mark. That's from Dean. David, do you remember your school days when no matter what you did, you were always hungry? And no matter how much you ate, the weight never... Well, it didn't really go that far up. It didn't come down either. Do you remember those good old days?
Well, I'm still always hungry now. I'm a perpetual eater myself, so I just love food. So yeah, it's I love food in almost all its forms. So yeah, I can understand where he's coming from there. What that question is about, just for people who aren't familiar with what it's about, is that I recommend to people who play cricket that the best way to eat is to follow the precision nutrition system from Dr. John Berardi. He knows what he's talking about. Yeah. And one of his sort of rules, if you like, is that you should eat every 2 to 3 hours, no matter what. And the reason for that is that just gives you a continual stream of energy into your body, a nice regular stream. So you don't get a sugar high and a crash or anything like that. You just get a regular stream of nutrients into your body, so you eat every 2 to 3 hours. It comes from the world of bodybuilding, where bodybuilders had to eat a lot of calories to build up their muscles. So that's where it comes from originally. And so it's got a little bit of a stigma, as in, oh, well, if you eat every 2 to 3 hours, you must be trying to bulk up. Which isn't, that's not the idea behind it. I mean, it's a good, if you are trying to bulk up, it is a good method to use, because if you're trying to bulk up, you want to eat as much food as you can eat, and eating every 2 hours is, a lot of food. So, but the general principle behind it is to get a steady stream of nutrients in, and you don't have to eat a massive meal every time. You can eat a relatively small meal, and your body is a little bit better at handling smaller meals more often than it is handling big meals less often. So in terms of this, let's go on to this chap's question. Now, the idea behind this chap's question, as far as I can work out, is that he wants to put on some weight. So in a way, he's trying to follow sort of the original bodybuilder principle of, putting on a bit of muscle. But he's only 13. So at age 13, he could he may not have gone through his major growth spurt yet. He may be still a relatively small person, because he hasn't sort of completed the transition into adulthood yet. So I shouldn't worry about it too much, because he's just going to grow anyway. At the age of 13, everybody grows anyway. So it's just really the rate of growth, and he could eat every 2 to 3 hours because it's better in terms of health. As long as you follow the other principles as well, it's better in health terms. But it's not the be-all and end-all. If he only wants to eat 3 times a day instead, then, that's not, you're not going to suddenly become a weedy person. Neither. You're going to keep growing and keep getting stronger. You'll be miles stronger at the age of 18 than you are at 13. Everybody is.
I've heard myths, and I know that you being the resident nutrition and fitness expert are really strong on this, but I've heard myths that there's always an age where you're too young to start nutrition or planning your nutrition for specific sports. So like Dean's case, he eats every 2 hours and at the age of 13. Now, many people would argue that he's too young to do this and he should just eat like a normal kid, so breakfast, lunch, dinner sort of thing. But is there an age where you're too young to start doing things like this?
Good question, actually. The answer is it depends. So what does it depend on? It depends on why he's doing it. If he's doing it to bulk up and become big and muscly, I wouldn't do it for that reason. So that would be the wrong reason to do it. However, that doesn't mean you can't do it, because at the age of 13, your body still needs a regular supply of nutrients. So if you're eating healthily, this is the key. If you're eating healthily every 2 to 3 hours, then that's absolutely fine. It's not going to cause any negative effects on you if every time you eat, you have a complete lean protein, some sort of vegetable, and maybe a bit of fruit every now and again.
Yeah.
And some sort of healthy fat. And maybe some sort of carbohydrate, you know, unprocessed carbohydrate, like oats, something like that. So if you're eating that kind of food,
it doesn't
really matter how much of it you're eating, because you're going to be eating healthy, you're going to be eating healthy foods. But if you're eating scoffing crisps and sweets every 2 hours, then that's not optimum. That's not optimum for your health. It's not optimum for your performance on the cricket pitch, and it's not optimum for long-term nutrition. If you look at it from the point of, should a 13-year-old start going in the gym and doing bodybuilding type exercises and eating a chicken breast every 2 hours, then no, they shouldn't be doing that. But that doesn't stop a 13-year-old doing sensible strength training, sensible fitness training, and eating a sensible diet based on the rules of precision nutrition. Because precision nutrition, everybody can benefit from those rules. And you can see what those rules are on our My Cricket Coach nutrition section. I'll make sure there's a link to that in the show notes so you can have a look at that and see if it's a good thing for you. And I follow it myself, so I highly recommend it.
Just on that, David, I was reading Adam Gilchrist's book, True Colors, a while back, and many people would look at him and think that he's just a freak of nature, his talent comes naturally and all that, and all the strength as well. But he talks about how from a young age, from the age of 10 actually, his dad's been training him with fitness, making him do push-ups or whatever, and getting his nutrition right as well. So it's all that hard work that's made him the cricketer that he is now. So just to say that it's never too early to start in things like these, but you have to do it the right way, as you said it. All right. David, the 6'2" bowler, says that he bowls reasonably fast, but he can't seem to get any bounce. And he also says that he struggles bowling to batsmen confident on the front foot. And he asks if you've got any suggestions to fix this, David. If you've seen in international cricket, the usual round arm bowlers, they don't get as much bounce as the high arm bowlers. So bowlers like Morkel get really good bounce, whereas bowlers like Malinga, who have a really round slingy arm, they get bounce, but not as effective as Morkel. Is that, would that be the cause for this, David, or are there other technical aspects as well?
I think, well, it's hard. Obviously, it's hard to say because we're sitting here and we've never seen him bowl. That would be the first thing that would spring to mind as well. What is his action like? Is it quite a round arm action? Quite a slingy action. If that's the case, then you're not going to get as much bounce because the ball's coming from a lower position. As you say, someone like Malinga, he's almost bowling round arm, isn't he?
So
he finds it much more difficult to get bounce. Yeah. Same as Darren Goff for England used to struggle to get bounce. Everyone used to say he's a skiddy bowler. He's a kiss the surface bowler, they say. That's the phrase they use now, isn't it? Where the ball skids on rather than hitting the deck hard and bouncing up quite hard. Say someone like Flintoff, who they call a hit the deck bowler, or the modern phrase is bowling a heavy ball.
Yeah.
So it could be that. If your action's nice and high, then you're going to get more bounce because the ball's coming from a higher position. The other thing is, which is fine, you know, that's fine. If it's just a slingy action, that's fine, because a slingy action can generate quite a lot of pace. So that's fine. As long as your hips and your shoulders are lined up so you know, you're not getting any lower back problems, then carry on with that and don't worry about the bounce. Just use the extra pace that you're able to generate from your slingy action.
Yeah.
In technical terms, I'd also look at what his legs are doing. Because if his back leg is collapsing... Yeah. Or his front leg is collapsing. The front leg is the important one, really. If his front leg is collapsing on impact, that can be quite dangerous in terms of the damage that you can do to your knee and your ankle. But also, you're going to lose a lot of pace in the front leg collapse, and you're going to lose a lot of bounce in the front leg collapse, because your whole body drops down when the front leg collapses. So have a look at you. Get someone you trust to have a look at you bowling. See if you've got a braced front leg, a nice strong front leg. If you haven't, if your front leg is bent at the point of delivery, then that I would seriously look at trying to fix that, because that can cause all kinds of problems, not least of which is you're not going to get a lot of bounce.
Yeah, that's right.
The other thing we need to consider is the wickets. He's from the UK. It's
Sussex, he says.
Exactly, beautiful part of the country. But depending on the level he plays, he could be playing on some pretty rotten wickets at the moment. It's May. Okay, it's late May, and we're finally getting some decent weather. But we've had a pretty wet few weeks. So it might be that he's been playing on a series of wickets where there's just no bounce in them. In that case, you're not going to get as much bounce as you would on a nice, hard August track when we've had a lovely summer. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Take that into account as well, and don't worry about it too much. Keep working on hitting your lines and your lengths. Work out what a good length is for you and what a good line is for you. This time of year in the UK, it's pretty much bowl at the stumps. Keep the ball well pitched up so you're hitting the stumps, and wait for the batsman to make the mistake, because on these type of wickets, when the ball's swinging around, the ball's seaming around a bit, but it's a bit slow off the pitch, then... bowl at the stumps and don't give the batsman any room to free his arms and play his shots.
Varun Singh from Melbourne, he's sort of asked a very general question, David. He says that he's in his off season and he's trying to work on his fitness and power. He hasn't said if he's a bowler, batsman, no rounder or anything. So he's just asked a general question, and he's asked you as well. So do you have any tips for him? I know there's a course in Pitch Vision Academy for that.
Yeah, there is, Just generally speaking about these type of questions, as you say, Kev, it's quite hard to answer the questions if you don't give us any detail. So if you're thinking of emailing in a question, and I know, Kev, you'll be giving out the email address later, but if you're thinking of emailing in a question, you've got a problem you want us to solve for you, we're happy to do that. We don't charge for this. I'm absolutely delighted to get your questions, and the more questions, the better, as far as I'm concerned. But don't worry about putting too much detail in. I'd rather have a massively long email, which is five paragraphs of incredible detail, than the question we got here, which was basically, it wasn't even a question really, was it? It was just, I'm working on my strength and power in the off season.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're kind of assuming that he wants us to help him by the fact that he's emailed in. But yeah, if you can give as much detail as you can when you're emailing in, that would be really helpful to us, because we can give you a more detailed answer. And if you've got a question about technique as well, ideally a video, sticking a video on YouTube or something like that, that would really help us as well. Because, I mean, one of the things I say all the time, isn't that right, Kev? I say this all the time. We've not seen this person bowling. We've not seen this person batting. So it's hard to say. So my guess is blah, blah, blah. So I'd rather, I'd rather not guess. I'd rather take the guesswork out by someone sending in a video, a YouTube video or something.
Yeah.
That's fine. Film it with your camera phone or whatever. The more detail we got, the better. Okay. So back to the question. Working on fitness and power off season. Because it's such a general question, I'll keep the answer quite general. We'll talk about what the off season is for, what it's generally about and why we need it and what you need to work on when you're in it. So at the moment, as we speak, we're in the Southern Hemisphere off-season, as you know, Kev.
Yes, right.
So the off-season is when you're not playing cricket. That's an important thing to say. You can't have an off-season if you're playing cricket. The reason I say that is because if you're from somewhere where it's warm and sunny all the year round, then there's a good chance that you will be playing cricket all the year round. I know in India, for example, that pretty much the entire year is cricket time of year.
Yeah.
It's only during the worst part of the rainy season when you literally can't, you know, because it's the weather's so bad.
Yeah.
You can't. But other than that, you know, it's pretty much all the year round. So if you can play all the year round, why would you want to take a while off to have an off season? Well, there's a few reasons for it. What you want to do is you want to have time away from actually playing. So to give your body time to do different things than you would do when you were playing cricket. So the key for me is that you can spend the time not playing. You can plan out what you want to do, what you want to achieve, both in season and off season. You can set down your goals and do all the mental training stuff. But also you can build up a base of fitness based on what your plan is. So if you say, right, you know, I really feel like I need to get stronger or faster or more powerful, then you can spend the off season building up a base of fitness, and then once you feel like you've built up your fitness base, then you can start working on some technical stuff. I mean, there's plenty of facilities available here in the UK, coaches and things like that, especially after Christmas, that's when it really starts to take off, and you can work on some technical things that maybe, again, you wouldn't have time for in season, or you wouldn't want to start working on things in the middle of a season, especially if you're in good form. You want to start tinkering with your technique and upset your form. So that's what the off season's for, as a general overview. If you want to know more about the off season in more detail, there's two places you can find out more. You can go onto the My Cricket Coach site, and I'll put a link up to this in the show notes. You can go onto the My Cricket Coach site. We do a complete course to off-season and pre-season training. So you can have a look at that. That's free. And then if you want even more detail than that gives you, then you can buy Rob Armand's strength and conditioning course on Pitchford Academy. And that gives you a complete year's worth of training advice. And you can just repeat that year on year on year until you're playing for your country.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more about especially trying new things in the off season, David, because me, especially this off season, I've been trying lots of things which I don't usually do in the off season. Usually in the off season, I just sit back, relax, and then when it comes to preseason, I start. I find it takes me a really long time to get back into the groove of things. So just playing regularly once every 2 weeks or once every week sort of thing, it gets my body into that groove. So when I come to pre-season, the actual season, I'd be ready.
Last week we talked about your backlift. Did you manage to have a practice of that?
Yeah, I tried that today and surprisingly everything went really well.
Yeah.
It was a really sort of moist pitch we played on today. It was a synthetic wicket, but it was moist as well. And I thought my backlift would hinder that. So I thought I'd struggle, but everything went really well.
Okay.
When I hit it, it stayed hit, and
excellent.
My technique's sort of improving, but it still needs a bit more practice. But
yeah, of course. Yeah. But you're starting to get your shoulders round now as well as your hips, yeah. And you
yeah, that's
getting
right.
into position better. Brilliant. Well, that's exactly what we talked about last week. So I'm glad that's working out. Long distance coaching.
Yeah, that's right. And I think as you try new things, at first your mind's not used to it, and your body's not used to it, but as you start playing with it, your body starts thinking, hang on, this is a better way to do things. And then it starts adapting.
Definitely.
So I think that's how it's happened. Because when I tried to go back to my old way today, I struggled with that. So I thought, okay, let me just stick with this.
Yeah, it takes time. It takes time because you do get into habits. And they're not always bad habits. Yep. They're just what your habit is. The classic example that was given to me by a chap called Roy Palmer, who we interviewed a long time ago on the show, was just fold your arms. Okay, so do that now. If you're listening now, fold your arms. And what you'll find is what most people do when they fold their arms is, one, they tuck one hand in there, underneath their arm, and the other hand goes over the top. Now, whatever, whichever way you do that, fold it the other way. So put your tucked in hand at the top and your other arm over the top, and it feels completely weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Why does it feel weird and uncomfortable? It's exactly the same. You've just done exactly the same thing, but it doesn't feel right, does it? And it's just a habit.
That's right.
You've just, at some point when you were very young, the first time you crossed your arms, you did it that way, and you've done it that way ever since. So it feels weird to do it the other way. So, and you get, and that's quite a simple move. Imagine what's happening when you're playing cricket. There's so many more complicated moves that it's very easy to get into a habit, and it's easy to get into a bad habit. It's easy to get into any habit, and it's very hard to adjust that habit. You'd have to, with the arm crossing thing, you'd have to probably do that for a few weeks before you got used to it.
Yeah.
It's weird though, isn't it? You know, it's weird.
Yeah, that's right.
You get into habits and don't even realise it. So always be aware of your body position if you can be, especially when you're practising. That's a really good point, Kev.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, that's all we have time for today. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, because I am, and
definitely,
you should too. If you guys have any questions or feedback, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Kevin Sampath from Australia signing off.
And this is David Hinchliff in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.